Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And our best of week continues on the Steve Jones Show. Sean Carey with you, News Radio 1070 WKOK, from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Got our best of show here till 5, then 5:06 late day news roundup with Mark Lawrence. Take you till 6:30 tonight. You'll have Phillies baseball on 1070 AM as the Phillies start a four-game weekend series with the Washington Nationals. Great effort last night by Zach Eflin for the Phillies. Went undefeated in the month of June, 5-0, with an ERA around 1.76. Rhys Hoskins with a three-run shot last night, all the Phillies needed to salvage a win in the series with the Yankees. Final score was 3-0. If we just have Zach Eflin pitch every night, get a three-run shot from Rhys Hoskins, yeah, they'd rack up at least 90 wins, right? Wishful thinking, right? So that series will start tonight, Nats and Phillies. Airtime will be 6:30 here on 1070 AM. Same airtime for tomorrow night. First pitch will be 1 hour earlier on Saturday night. SteveJonesShow.com, our website. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is Steve Jones PSU. And we also invite you to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. And you can also find 3 months of shows always archived at SteveJonesShow.com. We've got some more great replays here for you today. Keith Smith from RealGM.com, and also host of the Front Office Show podcast. Get some pro basketball talk going as we're now just days away from the start of NBA free agency, and hopefully less than a week away from finding out where LeBron James is going to go next, or will he stay put in Cleveland for at least one more year? So we got Keith coming up soon. Also, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, InviteManager.com, Tony Knopp. Got a replay with Steve and Tony next hour. And also, we'll be chatting and going back to last July when we originally had on the show the sports media writer for 30-plus years at the New York Times, Richard Sandomir, wrote a book about the pride of the Yankees, the movie. Of course, the infamous movie on the life of one of the famed New York Yankees of all time, Lou Gehrig. Talking about the movie itself. And earlier this year, back in the spring, the book became available in paperback. So we'll play back that interview with Steve and Richard Sandomir next hour as well. You can always get in contact with us. Let us know what you think about the show. Our email is stevejones@wkok.com, stevejones@wkok.com. Not too long ago here on the show, Steve brought up the question and the subject, should Penn State and Pitt play each other in football every year?
Realistically, based on how the Big Ten schedules, and again, the Big Ten has 9 conference games, while the ACC has 8 conference games, the Big Ten does not allow the flexibility for this series to realistically continue on a year-in and year-out basis. The earliest Pitt being on the schedule, and it's not a guarantee it would even be then, but the earliest would be 2030. There's 2 more games with Pitt, this year at Heinz Field and next year at Beaver Stadium. Originally, it was a 2-game series. And I think everyone knows how I felt about this the entire time. Look, I'm looking at a program in Penn State that is playing for national championships. Okay, they're playing to get into the college football playoff.
Now, there are many different avenues of doing it. Probably going undefeated in conference play and going undefeated against almost any kind of conference, non-conference group would do it. A 12-0 Big Ten team, 13-0 Big Ten team, including the Big Ten championship game, would do it. All right? So I understand that. I think that would be a realistic statement. Okay. So now, in a conference that is stacked, especially a division that is stacked, Penn State is obviously in the same division with Ohio State, Michigan. Michigan State's been able to get better. And it sounds like Maryland has recruited very well. That's all in one division. Those are teams you're going to be playing every single year. And you know Indiana can have its moments, and then we'll see what Rutgers is going to do. But Maryland's recruited better, no question. Michigan is still Michigan. Defensively, they're going to be really good again this year. And Michigan State, after a tumble, brought itself back up last year, where they're a really good team again. Not great, but they're a really good team. Okay, so what do you want to do with your non-conference? I've said this once, and I've said it 100 times. I'll say it again. I do not want Penn State to be in Iowa's situation. You're like, well, Iowa, why Iowa? Iowa is forced to play Iowa State every year. They have no non-conference flexibility. They are stuck. And I do, okay, stuck playing Iowa State every year, which means they can't, for example, do a home and away with UCLA. Can't do a home and away with Auburn. Can't do a home and away with Texas A&M. Can't do it. Cannot do it. Years ago, I was speaking in Newcastle. I want to say it was 2015, I think it was. It was whatever year Army was on the schedule. I think that was 2015, right?
You are correct. Yep, October 15. Yep.
So it was in May of 2015, or late April, early May of 2015, I went to Newcastle because I remember I listened to the NFL draft on the way back. In fact, I listened to Johnny Manziel get picked on radio, on Sirius. And when I was there, I'm going to get pick questions more there. Okay, I'm going to get more pick questions anywhere west of Altoona. I'm going to get pick questions. East of Altoona, I don't. I really don't get them that often. More, you know, people are like, you know, the further east you go, the more they want to see Notre Dame on the schedule. I'm just telling you based on feedback I get. Okay? And I'm out at more of these things than anybody else here, so I get more face-to-face feedback on stuff like that. And they were saying, well, geez, we're going to play Army. Why, we should be playing Pitt. And you have to, there's an economic formula here that has worked forever. And the economic formula that has worked here forever is that you need the TV money, you need the gate money, you need donations in the Nittany Lion Club and so forth, but you also need, as part of the economic formula here, 7 home games in order to keep all the sports. And I don't want to be dropping sports. I would not like to see that happen, dropping sports. And if you play Pitt every year on the schedule, because of the 9 home games, you're going to have some years with 6 home games and some years with 7. And you can't go away from it, because they're already scheduled in that slot with home and aways with Virginia Tech, West Virginia, and, of course, the Auburn one in 21 and 22. What excites you more, the idea of seeing Pitt come into the Beaver Stadium or seeing Auburn come in? Now, 6 years from now, Actually, it's less than that. 3 years from now, when Auburn comes in, or four seasons from now, when Auburn comes in, they may be the Auburn everyone expects on this particular day. Or maybe something's happened and they're mediocre. I don't know. Nobody knows when you schedule that far ahead. Pitt, 4 years from now, could be powerful. Or they could continue on the path of mediocrity they've had in recent years. You don't know 4 seasons from now it's going to play out, but on paper, I'd rather see Auburn in that slot. Because the other two slots have to be games with guarantees where then Penn State keeps the gate, keeps the parking, keeps concessions, the whole thing, the whole nine yards. They get everything. Which is critical to making sure that they keep everything above water here. Now, if Penn State had 8 conference games and not 9, I would be far more reticent about the pitch situation. All right, you know, maybe play them 4 times in 10 years, maybe 6 times in 10 years, something like that. Because you'd have more flexibility in the schedule to play around with it. But now the Big Ten, along with the Big 12 and the Pac-12, have 9 home games. You can't, or 9 conference games. You can't, you don't have that flexibility. It doesn't exist. Years ago, I'm going to bring up something that a lot of people have forgotten about, but I'll bring it up right now because I remember such things. The Big 10 and the Pac-12 are going to do a football-basketball joint venture with the idea of maybe playing a triple header at the Staples Center, playing a triple header at the United Center, playing, you know, because each conference had 12 teams at that point, and they could do it. And then it would be on the opening weekend of the season or the second weekend, one of the two, it'd be a Big Ten versus Pac-12 matchup. Well, the Pac-12 was the one that pulled out of it. And the reason they pulled out of it was that USC and Stanford both said, look, we don't have the scheduling flexibility to do this because we're locked into long-term contracts with Notre Dame. It's the same concept. It is the same concept. I don't want Penn State to be Iowa, where Iowa is stuck every year playing Iowa State. And then what happens at the end of the season? Everyone says, well, we can't really consider Iowa for this spot. Why? Because they don't play anybody. Yeah, I'm looking at a big picture. I don't care about backyard, anything. That doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Okay, that ship sailed. And remember, you know, it is very convenient for everybody without a memory, okay, which includes a lot of people that, I mean, they have no semblance of history. Okay, Pitt's in this position because Pitt put itself in this position. Pitt looked at Joe Paterno back in 1981. I did the interview with him in his office in Rec Hall about the All Sports Conference. It was long. It was a 45-minute interview about what he wanted to do with it, the goals he had for it, so forth, the schools he wanted to invite, the meetings that were going on. And then he kept me up to date because I took the time to do it. I took the time to do it, so Joe kept me up to date the entire time. And then the decision was made, Syracuse, Boston College, okay, Pitt wasn't going to do this. They got into the Big East for basketball, which for a long period of time worked out great for Pitt. But they elected not to do this. Okay. And then they're still picking their collective jaws off the floor that Penn State joined the Big Ten. What you're going to do? What you're doing? What? Because they had their cake and they were eating it too with Big East basketball, which was great. And everybody was still independent in football, so they could still play Penn State in football. Never had to worry about playing them in basketball ever. And that was it. And then Penn State joined the Big Ten, and suddenly they didn't have things their own way. And they have labeled Penn State as the bad guy ever since. It's been a very successful bad guy campaign. when the bottom line is their administration in the 1980s had absolutely no foresight whatsoever. Joe was on the television committee with the College Football Association. He had a feeling as to where the Oklahoma-Georgia thing was going. When that broke through, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor, boom, television exploded, money for football exploded, it was all over the place. He knew it was going to happen, and he had a plan in place for the entire East to take advantage of it, and Pitt didn't take advantage of it. Now here we are sitting here in 2018. Oh, they won't play, but it's just, you know what? You know, blame your own people. They made the mistake, and nobody ever talks about that mistake. And then, frankly, that bothers me that nobody talks about that mistake. Nobody talks about that mistake, but maybe because I'm one of the few people around when it happened. The genesis of the Pitt series returning, Penn State was going into the sanctions. They did not know what to do about scheduling. Didn't know what to do. Now it's like, geez, now what do you want to do? I mean, for example, nothing had been signed, but BYU was going to sign something for a home and away with Penn State. And then they called up and they said, and BYU didn't back out. Okay. BYU did not back out. Okay. So you understand. They said, hey, look, what do you want us to do here? And again, Penn State doesn't know where it's going with its football program in 2012. They don't know what's going on. So they kind of took that and they waylaid it and said, nah, maybe not now. And probably not ever. And finally, Dave Joyner came up with the idea of, like, let's start getting some of the regional teams back on. So you notice in 13 they opened with Syracuse at the Meadowlands. They got Pitt back on the schedule. They got West Virginia back on the schedule. So, that's what they were trying to do, regionalize the schedule, bring back some of the old rivalries, thinking that that would be, again, you got to remember the mindset in 2012. And the first with Pitt was home and away in 16-17. Then in 13, they advanced it to a four-game series, adding in this year 18 and then 19 next year at Beaver Stadium. The entire world thought that Penn State was going to be in a world of hurt, and it might take them, there are some opinions, not all, it would take them 10 years to get back. The NCAA then did something unprecedented. They then started rolling back sanctions. They have never rolled back sanctions on anyone ever before. And there are really good reasons why they rolled back the sanctions. We're not going to get into that because I think it's pretty obvious to anybody who's been around here what the reasons happen to be. And James Franklin stepped in, and this guy not only got them back on track and in his third year gets into a Big Ten championship in the Rose Bowl, but now he has laid such a great foundation here, along with his staff, that Penn State is now built again for the long term. And that's what's been so great about this. Not only the quick ascent to the top, but they're not a one-hit wonder. They've brought themselves back now, back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games. Well, Penn State has not had back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games since 85 and 86. Do you realize that? 85-86 is the last time the Orange Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl that Penn State played in back-to-back New Year's Six games. So, they do this, and not only that, it's sustainable. They have built this for the long haul. They are now at the point where they can properly redshirt people. play them. They don't have to play anybody ahead of schedule. Certain situations will come up with injuries or things like that where, hey, they may have to, okay, because that's just the nature of the game. But they've built it for the long haul. I mean, I think they're going to be really good again this year. Really good again this year. They're going to play a tough schedule. They're going to play a really tough schedule. They got Wisconsin at home, Iowa at home, to go with Michigan State and Ohio State at home, at Michigan. You got Maryland at home. So now let's get to the Pitt part of it. You don't know how these things play out. You just don't know. Remember when Penn State got Central Florida on the schedule? And the first game was at Beaver Stadium? And then, of course, the second one ended up being in Ireland? Well, it turned out they had this quarterback by the name of Blake Bortles. See, again, you don't know the timing of things. You just don't know. I mean, sometimes you put a schedule together ahead of time, and all of a sudden you have to adjust it. I mean, do you realize, remember when Penn State played the night game with Rutgers? And it was the first ever Big Ten game for Rutgers. Remember that? In 2014, I want to say. Was it 14? I think it was. It's 2014. James's first year. Right? Do you know what that game was supposed to be? I have all sorts of scheduling fun facts that a lot of people I don't think realize. That game was supposed to be Nebraska as a non-conference game at Nebraska. And then Nebraska got into the Big Ten. So they replaced it with Rutgers. And then Rutgers got in the Big Ten. So they just kept it as a conference game. All right. Now let's bring it back to Pitt. You don't know how things are going to play out 4, 6, 8, 10 years from now. So part of scheduling is guesswork. Virginia Tech's been really good over the years. Justin Fuente's coming off a really good year. Really good year at Virginia Tech. It looks like they're on decent footing there. Looks like they got a chance to be a good long-term program. He stepped in. He's done a good job replacing Frank Beamer. Well, that's the 2020 game. Okay. Then they've got Auburn home and away in 21 and 22. You only have that one opening. See, it's only the one opening because you want to have 7 home games. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
During Hyundai's 4th of July sales event, celebrate America's birthday with America's best warranty and a whole lot of savings from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 2017 new Hyundais that must go now. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 6 2017 Hyundai Elantra Limiteds with savings over $6,000.
$6,000 off an Elantra Limited is huge.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 2017 Hyundai Sonatas with savings up to $6,144, starting at $18,666. Every Hyundai comes with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and Hyundai Assurance. If an SUV is more in your mind, 2017 Santa Fe Sports start at $22,576 with savings on Santa Fe's now up to $5,199. It's Hyundai's 4th of July sales event at Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburyhyundai.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sean Carey here for Steve. It's our best of week from the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Next hour, we'll have replays with Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management and InviteManager.com, plus from the New York Times, Richard Sandomir, author of the book The Pride of the Yankees. Got some pro basketball talk now from RealGM.com and the Front Office Show podcast. It's Keith Smith.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Keith, we know that the Philadelphia 76ers have long lived in the world of analytics, which comes with it a wide variety of opinions, including lineups and so forth. What did it tell you about Brett Brown that he looked at a T.J. McConnell last night and he broke up the starting lineup and put McConnell in there because of past performance?
Yeah, I think that's the best kind of coaching. You know, when you're marrying the numbers with kind of the eye test and just the feel for what your team needs, I think Brett Brown knew his team needed a shot in the arm. They needed a guy who was going to come out and scrap and give them energy. And that's obviously what T.J. McConnell did. And he was a huge part of that win. I believe 19 points, I think it was, career high, playoff or regular season. But beyond that, it was just a lift in energy he gave the team beyond the scoring that really helped propel them to that victory.
Well, you look at Game 2, when I watched Game 2, I thought the Sixers, when McConnell was out there, were in pretty good shape. And then, look, he made the move back to Ben Simmons, and I understand that. He's your future. I've got it. So you got to show some confidence in him. But at that point, they went downhill. Was that really maybe a tipping point that maybe we ought to think about something different?
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough I've always long believed if you put a point guard on the floor that can't shoot at all, or in Ben Simmons' case, won't even attempt shots, it makes that much more difficult on everybody to have to come up with bigger shots themselves. A guy like Simmons is so talented and can do a lot of things, but that puts all the pressure on everybody else to be a shot maker. And in this series, when you're going against a big man like Al Horford, who can really defend him and battle him inside, as well as being able to drop off him and try to force him to be a shooter, that makes it really difficult on Simmons and then, by virtue, the entire Sixers offense.
Is Horford a definition to you, Keith, of a real pro's pro?
Yeah, 100%. He's the kind of guy who I don't think numbers mean anything to him at this point in his career. I don't know if they ever did. And I think he is just the kind of guy, he's going to go out there, give Brad Stevens whatever it is he needs. If he needs him to be a playmaker, he's going to do that. If he needs him to be a scorer, he's going to do that. And every single night, he's going to be probably one of, if not the best defender in the entire lineup.
What is it about Brad Stevens' between-game and in-game adjustments that impresses you or maybe doesn't impress you?
I think the thing that impresses me most is that he never asks his players to do anything they can't do. It's always about playing to their strengths, putting them in a position to succeed. He's not going to ask this Semi Ojeleye to go out there and try to be a 20-point-per-game scorer. He's not capable of doing that, so Stevens isn't even going to ask. The one thing I wish he would do on occasion, I think he lets the team try to play through things a little longer than he should, and he very much sticks to a pretty rigid substitution pattern, which at times makes it frustrating for fans because you'll see a guy, you know, maybe hit 3-4 shots in a row, but if it's his time and minutes-wise to go to the bench, he's going to the bench, and that can be a tough thing to swallow. In the long run, it's probably the best thing, but in game-to-game, it can be really hard to watch at times.
LeBron James and Cleveland. The other night, he hit that phenomenal shot going left, shooting right-handed, banking it in, winning the game. Now, situationally, I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, you know, after broadcasting 36 years of basketball, that's a great situation for a team to be in where the worst you get out of it happens to be overtime. Now, you may lose in overtime, but you're going to get no worse than overtime. How come people don't bring up that stuff when it comes to him about it? They weren't down one. I mean, he hit a shot in the game that was tied.
Yeah, you know, I think people, it's a little bit of let's build the legend up and let's build the mystique, that recency bias of, you know, he's the greatest ever and let's just continue to add to that. But, you know, I think LeBron is the kind of guy who, if he can throw up a crazy shot and maybe win it or play for overtime, he's going to do that. I think had they been down one, he would have made a much more concerted effort to get himself as close to the basket or get fouled. He's just, you know, he's beyond being one of the most talented players, he's also one of the smartest players in the league, and he's not gonna risk things just for the sake of making it difficult on himself.
Yeah, and that's why, for example, to me, one of the elements that made Tiger Woods so special is that Tiger Woods was able to improvise on the fly as to what was needed at the time. I feel LeBron James does the same thing. Whatever I need to do at this time, if I need to try the spectacular, I'll try it because the situation warrants it.
right, like that one the other night, or if I need something more conventional because you're down, he'll come up with something different.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that LeBron does now, too, especially as he's gotten older, we don't see him go to the basket for those kind of, you know, thunderous dunks anymore on a regular basis. But he'll pull those out when he knows his team needs one or when the crowd needs it to get going. That's when he's going to pull those out. Or my favorite ones are when he does one on the road when the crowd needs to be quieted down and he wants to send a message to them. Then that's when he's going to pull one of those out. And it's almost a, hey, don't forget, I'm still here and I can do this.
Well, speaking of still here, there aren't a lot of guys that are still there from January. I mean, when the trading deadline showed up, the Cavaliers made a lot of changes. They, you know, they kept Thompson, they kept Smith, they kept Kevin Love, of course. But they changed over a lot of that team. So, Keith, in reality, let's take LeBron off the floor. How good are the guys around him, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's maybe a 500 roster, and that might even be being generous. I don't know where you'd get the offensive creation from. Maybe Jordan Clarkson a little, but Jordan Clarkson was doing that for the last few years on a team that wasn't very good. Maybe Rodney Hood, but Rodney Hood's never healthy, and he's inconsistent when he is. So that, at best, is probably a 500 roster. The thing that I find most interesting is that LeBron, they made all these changes, but when things, the chips were on the table against the Pacers, he went back to his guys, the guys who have been there with him. And he said, I want to go down with my guys who have been through these battles with me and know what they, I know I can count on them. And that, other than George Hill, they really just went back to, all right, we're going back to the guys who have been with LeBron, and that's how we're going to win this thing. And that's what we've seen, or saw, rather, throughout the bulk of the Toronto series as well.
Everyone gets excited about the young stars in the league that get there, and Anthony Davis, justifiably so. I remember doing a game when he was at Kentucky against Penn State. Karl Anthony Towns, people like that. I mean, great, great young players in the league. Yet the teams that are advancing are, for the most part, older teams. Golden State's grown into being an older team. Houston's become one. Cleveland is one. What does that mean on this level to have been around the block? And what does it mean to have at least three players at a high level that have been around the block?
Yeah, it's certainly the veteran teams. The old adage is in the NBA is very few teams win on their first playoff run. You got to get in there and take your lumps. I think guys are not used to the fact that everything comes faster and is that much more physical in the playoffs, and that every possession really does matter. You can't have turnovers, can't throw the ball away. Look at Philadelphia, you know, for example. They're so young. They played throughout a lot of this series with Boston, kind of the way they played in the regular season. They didn't really value the ball. And against the team that executes like the Celtics, you're going to get buried when you do those kind of things. But, yeah, that's where it is. And then as far as having at least three players who have done it at a high level, that's been proven over and over again. It's the teams with the best and the most talent are generally the teams that are in there at the end. And all these teams that we're seeing now, they've either got a ton of talent or they've got really good high-end talent like a Cleveland that has a LeBron that really can't be matched by anybody else.
Keith, in your opinion, when you look at the sync and the synergy between Paul, Harden, and Ariza, what does that do for Houston in the hurdles that they're trying to clear?
Yeah, if they're going to get this series wrapped up, I wouldn't be surprised if they wrap it up tonight against Utah. And then it's on to Golden State. And there's a path for them, obviously, to beat the Warriors. It's probably, I don't know how likely it is to walk that path, but it's there. And it's one where they hit, you know, a bunch of three-pointers in a couple games and win those games. James Harden wins the game almost by himself with 50 or so points, and then now you're in a Game 7 where anything can happen. But what it's done, in order for James Harden to have that game where he can score 50 and win it by himself, they needed to get him a guy like Chris Paul, who gives him what I like to call in-game rep, where James Harden, instead of having to be the ball handler on every single play, James Harden can give the ball to Chris Paul and say, you know, I'm going to go spot up for a couple of trips here because I need to catch my breath. Versus the last couple of years, he had to do everything offensively for the Rockets. It was completely worn down by the time we got to this point in the season.
Chris Paul is a great player, no question about it, the way he distributes the ball. Yet the odd thing happened in Utah the other night. He picked up his first fourth-quarter assist of the series, which that took me aback when I heard them say that.
are they doing too much one-on-one in the fourth quarter or just not threatened enough in the fourth quarter? Do you read anything into that at all?
I think there's a little bit to it, at least, where they default back to what they've been the last couple of years, which is get the ball to Harden and everybody get out of his way. And I think that's almost they occasionally need reminded of, hey, wait a minute, we have this other guy who is a Hall of Famer and an all-timer over there. Let's get him a couple touches and let him see what he can do versus always having to rely on James Harden. I think it's also a credit to the Utah defense. They have, in the course of each game in the series, they've really buckled down and been better each game as the game has gone on longer. But for the most part, I think it's more the Rockets just they're defaulting to what they know when there might be a bump in the road. And that's one of those things where that's on Mike D'Antoni to remind those guys, hey, let's make sure we keep Chris Paul involved.
Steph Curry is back, and now he's back in the starting lineup. How do you read Golden State right now? I'll just leave it open-ended. How do you read Golden State right now?
Yeah, I think they're the best team in the league, and I think they have shown at times in this series against New Orleans that they absolutely are the best team in the league, and that they, when they are really serious about it and they lock in, there's no team like them on either end of the floor. They can be the absolute best defensive team in the NBA as well as an offensive team that can't be touched by anybody else. And they've shown that at times. And I know a lot of people want to say, well, in the regular season they weren't that. And I think it came down to the bulk of that roster is they're bored. This is four straight years of this for them. They just need to get to the playoffs. You know, it doesn't matter. They just need to get there and get the real thing started. And we saw that in the first round. You know, they handled their business very easily without Steph. And then against New Orleans, they since he's been back, he's one of the easiest guys to reintegrate into a team because, you know, he can do so many things as far as an offensive player. So they just bring him right back in. They're rolling right now. And if you had to ask, I think they're going to be they should be the odds-on favorite, you know, to repeat as champions once again.
Every fan base in the country wishes they were that bored.
Right?
I mean, really. I have to ask you a college basketball-related question. The Rice Commission came out, and the first thing they talked about is something that they have no control over, zero, and that is the one-and-done. It's not an NCAA rule. This is negotiated between the Players Association and the NBA owners. Now, you and I both, we just talked about the NBA, the better teams are the older teams. I would ask an owner, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, they wouldn't mind having an older, more mature league. Meanwhile, the Players Association doesn't mind opening it up to anybody to get in there. Will the NBA address it? And if so, how long might it be before they address it? Because they don't have to do anything if they don't want to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They don't have to do anything until the next CBA comes up, and that's the next time the union can really push it. But I think one of the nice things with Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts have built a relationship where they say, we don't have to wait for things to get contentious before we start to address things, which is the best way it can be that's going to, you know, promote a healthy league. So I think you're going to see this get addressed in probably the next couple of years. And they're going to figure out something that they believe works. But the one thing that I continue to hear, and I want to be kind of conscious of as always, the NBA is only ever going to do what is best for the NBA, and that includes the NBA Players Association. They, you know, for lack of a better term, they don't care about college basketball. They put them out of business as a entity, and it becomes they have this giant, robust minor league, much like minor league baseball. I think they'd be perfectly content to have that. It's just they're not in position to do that. And those are the things that need to change. Is they've got to make some changes to the way the G League works, probably some of the salary and contract structure changes to make sure when you're bringing in these kids who are 17, 18 years old, you have something in place to take care of them. Because right now, I think what a lot of fans miss is most of your high-end college basketball programs, and that's not even the guys you're seeing on TV in the Final Four. I'm just talking the really good programs that are, you know, around the top 25, they have better facilities and development systems set up than the G League does. And it's just because the money has been pumped into those college programs to be there versus the G League. It's still, in a lot of ways, it's a fledgling, you know, thing, and it started. We don't even have 30 teams with their own minor league team yet. That's one of the things that I think gets very easily forgotten by a lot of people when they say, change this, change that, and just be done with it.
Yeah, there are 30 NBA teams and 27 G League teams. Okay, the math tells you what the deal is. One final question, and I'm going to keep it on that angle. Is it important for people to understand, like, as you said, the NBA is looking out for the NBA, and that means the Players Association. Aren't really any scouts in the mood to go scout high school games again like they did 15 years ago? I mean, isn't it just easier to scout players that are in college?
Yeah, 100%. The answer is no. I talk to a lot of scouts. It's a big part of my job. And I can tell you, not a one of them wants to be back in high school gyms again. And what it means is every staff needs to increase probably close to 5 or 6 more guys. And then those guys have kind of their almost part-time unofficial guys who are out there being talent spotters. And it doesn't just mean getting into high school gyms. It means going to AAU tournaments. It means having to see these kids, you know, when they're sophomores and juniors, because you can't just go off their senior year. It's a big hassle that I don't think a lot of the scouts want. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to get their way. I think that's where we're headed, is back to that direction, at least to some extent, where we're going to see these kids allowed to come back out of high school. It's going to be how they balance that. Maybe teams make rules of almost similar to the college game, where you can only see them at certain times of the year and only so many times, or things like that. I don't know where all that will go, because I know the scouts do not want to be in those high school and AAU tournaments on any sort of regular basis.
Absolutely not. And it's Keith Smith, RealGM.com, and the host of the NBA Front Office Show podcast. I really enjoyed this. Great information, great conversation. Thanks, Keith.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury, and on WKOK.com.